It is Tuesday, November 30th, and coming up on Golf Today, Tiger Woods speaks in the Bahamas. What does his future look like? When will he play again? Brandel Chamblee joins us to react to Tiger Woods' press conference. Doug Smith joins us from the Beyond the Fairway podcast to remember the late, great Lee Elder. And Suzanne Pedersen named European Solheim Cup captain. It's all ahead on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Welcome back to Golf Today on a Tuesday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. We await the press conference of the 15-time major champion Tiger Woods from the Hero World Challenge, where he is the tournament host. That should begin moments from now. Tiger has said in an interview with Golf Digest magazine he will play golf again. Several events, maybe a handful of events. Does that mean that we should start saying and questioning whether this man can win again? Because that seemed to be a foolish thought just a couple of weeks ago.
Knowing what we know about Tiger Woods over the last 20-odd years of his career, is anyone going to seriously think Tiger will go out there to purely play a ceremonial role? Mm-hmm. Tiger's going out there because he thinks there is a chance, as he put it, that he could click off an occasional tournament. And maybe he can, you know, as we see every week on the PGA Tour, guys get wobbly on Sunday. And Tiger was, throughout his 82 wins, tended to get in front, and then he was like Seabiscuit. He was gone. No one could catch him. He never really benefited from other guys getting wobbly and handed him tournaments. Maybe that's what happens now in the next chapter of his career. But you know that no matter how injured he is, no matter how broken the body is, that if other guys see Tiger Woods' name up close to the top of the leaderboard on a Sunday afternoon, they're going to notice it.
Clearly the motivation is there, but I think the motivation is different and it's new. Obviously his son falling in love with the game has been a big part of Tiger's resurgence as well. And the fact that Charlie loves to play, the fact that they love to kind of have their back and forth. We know the smiles that Tiger had, of course, when he was able to compete with his son Charlie at the PNC in Orlando. We see Tiger has sat down right now at the Hero World Challenge. And it's obviously a big, very moment this day. He's been waiting for this moment. We've been waiting for this moment. Let's send it out to the Bahamas and Tiger Woods.
We are pleased to be joined today by tournament host Tiger Woods, as well as Dr. Pavan Munjal, Chairman, CEO, Hero MotoCorp. Dr. Munjal, I'll start with you today. After a year away from the tournament due to the pandemic, can you share what you're most looking forward to as the Hero World Challenge returns to Albany this week?
Thank you. Thank you, Ryan. And good morning to all of you here at the Hero World Challenge at Albany, and a very, very warm welcome once again after a gap of 1 year. We're back here after 2 years, in fact. I'm personally thrilled to be back here this morning amongst all of you, and more importantly, once again, sitting here with my friend Tiger after many, many months. It's always bliss for me and for all of us from Hero to come back here at Albany for the Hero World Challenge. It's always a treat to be amongst friends with Tiger and the 20 other fortunate pros who get to play the Hero World Challenge. A very unique event, a very different golf event, a fun event, yet part of the PGA Tour. I don't want to talk too much about the pandemic. We've all been talking about it for so many months. A new talk now since the last couple of days, a new strain. But life has to go on. One of my friends here was just saying, we are lucky that we play outdoors. We are not bowling. We won't be allowed to do that then. From that point of view, God has been kind to us through this game. All of you are playing again. All the tours are playing. The pros are back on the courses. Now, this week, let's all have fun. Let's have a treat here at Albany. Let's enjoy Bahamas. And let's watch the best of golf on this beautiful golf course here. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Munjal. Tiger, it's great to see you looking healthy. Seems like the recovery's progressing nicely. Can you share what it means to you to be back here hosting at Albany for the sixth time after a year off last year?
Yeah, it's been a long 22 months for all of us, not being able to play last year. We completely understand the reasons why with the pandemic, trying to keep everyone safe, and it was the right call. But it's exciting to have it this week. You know, this is our sixth time here, seventh time with Hero Motor Corp. So we're excited about that and our future with them. The look at the field this year, the strongest we've ever had. It's incredible. The players that have shown up, I think there's eight new players this week that are being introduced to this format and this event. A lot of the players who have been first-timers that have come from this event have started new charities or new foundations from what they've learned here at this event. So we're very proud of that. Some have expanded on what they've been doing in their own charities and their own foundations from what they've learned at this event. So hopefully that trend continues. We have a great week weather-wise. Course is immaculate. So it's going to be a lot of fun this week.
Recently, your foundation celebrated its 25th anniversary mm-hmm. and reached more than 2 million students served through its educational programs. Can you share how important this week is to the TGR Foundation?
Yeah, just a couple months ago, we reached 25 years of doing this and serving the under youth kids in the United States and around the world. We've reached 2 million kids either through our different various platforms, but we continue to push our STEM programs. We continue to push our reach and how far we can and how many kids we can serve. There's so much potential out there. If they have access, and accessibility is something that not everyone has, and especially it has unfortunately dramatically shown its ugly head during this pandemic, the haves and have nots, and you've seen students, you know, fall back an entire grade. So we want to make up that gap, and we have some great plans for the future of that, and working with other companies in other states to make that happen.
All right, now we'll take some questions from media that we have in the room with us. We've got a couple microphone holders. If you have a question, raise your hand. We'll get a microphone to you. We'll start right here with Dylan DeChair, golf.com, please.
Hey, Tiger. Welcome back. The Hero has served as a place where you've staged comebacks before or comeback from injuries, surgeries, various different things. I'm just wondering this year how different you feel compared to, you know, coming back from other surgeries or injuries in the past?
Well, I've hosted this event, unfortunately, not as a player, you know, in the field. And this year is one of them. So, yeah, it'll be fun watching the guys, you know, come here and play and tee it up and, you know, be out there. I miss, because I've been away from the game for, call it, an entire year. I just miss the jabbing, the needling, and, you know, how's everyone doing? And I mean, there's only so much you can do via text and phone calls. You know, a lot happens, and we get caught up a lot out here on tour in locker rooms and having dinners and, you know, off-site stuff like that. So to be able to catch up with the guys this week, it'll be fun. I haven't seen majority of them you know, since February. Some have come over to the house. Most of them have texted me, you know, over that period of time. But I haven't physically seen a lot of them, so it'll be nice to catch up.
Steve DiMeglio?
Eric, could I ask a couple? You've been down this road before on recovery. How much more difficult has this one been?
Yeah, this one's been much more difficult. The knee stuff that I had on my left knee, those operations were, I guess, one thing. Then that's one level. Then you had the back, that's another level. And then with this... with this right leg, that was, it's hard to explain how difficult it's been. Just to be immobile for, you know, 3 months, and just lay there, and, you know, I was just looking forward to just getting outside. That was, you know, a goal of mine. And especially for a person who has lived his entire life outside, that was a goal. And finally got to that point, went transitioned from wheelchair to crutches to now nothing. It's been a lot of hard work. I'm very thankful to all the surgeons and especially the nurses who are the unsung heroes through all of it, who were there, you know, by my bed and kept my spirits up, all my friends and family. There were some tough times in there. There were some really, really tough times, and pain got pretty great at times, but they helped me get through it, and I'm on the better side of it, but I still got a long way to go.
And, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, yeah. Steve. And is it too early to have a target tournament to zero in on, like the PNC or Augusta or the Open?
I'll put you this way. As far as playing at the tour level, I don't know when that's going to happen. Now, I'll play a round here and there, a little hit and giggle. I can do something like that. I certainly like playing from, you know, the USGA suggests, you know, play forward. I really like that idea now. I don't like the tees on back, so I like play it forward. Come on, let's move it up. Let's move it up. To see some of my shots fall out of the sky a lot shorter than they used to is a little eye-opening. But at least I'm able to do it again. That's something that for a while there it didn't look like I was going to. But I'm able to participate in the sport of golf. Now, to what level, I do not know that. And, you know, I'll keep you abreast, all of you guys abreast as progress continues to go on, whether or not I'll be out here and at what level and when.
All right, we'll go right down the line here, starting with Mark Cannizzaro.
Hey, Tiger. I'm wondering what you remember of the accident. Obviously, we all saw the result, and it looked so horrifying and scary. And I have a follow-up to that.
Yeah, all those answers have been answered in the investigation. So you can read about all that there in the post report.
And can you speak about what some of the most difficult moments were for these last 10 or 11 months for you? I mean, you skimmed on it a little bit, but what were some of the times that were most difficult?
Well, I think that it's just laying there. I'm laying still. And I was in the hospital for only 3 weeks, but I was in a hospital bed for 3 months. So that in itself is difficult. Being assisted everywhere I go, not being able to move anywhere. As I said, just looking forward to just getting outside. You know, eventually I got to a point where they could wheelchair me outside safely and I could feel the sun. You know, that was that was a milestone. You know, it's little things like that added up. And then eventually when I started to crutching around the house, I built a really nice house. But I didn't realize how big it was until you started putting crutches on. there were times where I had to take breaks. But I tell you what, though, there's a point in time where my triceps got pretty jacked. So that was a lot of fun. But as a whole, it's been tough at times, yes. Some dark moments. But then again, as I was making progress through it, too, you know, I could see some light. And that was giving me hope. I'm able to participate more with my kids and their activities, and more, and just in life in general. So I'm on the positive side.
Had a couple of quick ones, Tiger. First of all, do you recall the day you first walked without crutches?
Say again?
The day you first walked without help, without crutches, or?
It was probably about 2 months after the accident. No, 2 months after the accident, before I walked with crutches, I was in a wheelchair.
I know that. I meant when the first time you were able to walk like you did coming into this room without.
Without?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Well, I did it probably maybe a little earlier than they suggested.
And secondly, you've had, I've lost track, 9, 10 surgeries before this.
I had 5 knee, 5 back, so 10.
Even 10. None of them involved the kind of trauma, the kind of adrenaline-induced fear that this one involved, and I'm just curious if you ever have any flashbacks to that. Do you ever think about it? Do you ever have any memories, anything like that?
I don't. No, I'm very lucky in that way.
Next question from Daniel Rappaport.
Spinal fusion surgery. you needed to climb Mount Everest again, and then yesterday you said that you don't really. That you might not have the body to do that. What has that shift been like for you mentally and personally?
Well, I've made the climb up there a few times, and I've had a pretty good run in my career. And I just knew that once I came back from the spinal fusion surgery, I still had my hands. The only thing that was holding me back was my back. And once I realized that was good and it was solid, I wasn't gonna have the zinging down my leg. I wasn't gonna have the drop foot anymore. I wasn't gonna have any of those issues. Okay, well, can I make a swing? Yes. Ooh, I have power. Didn't think I'd have power. All of a sudden, I would play at home and I would shoot scores, not the 77s and the 78s, and they were in the mid 60s without really trying. Like, okay, this is new. Let's see if we can push this a little bit further. So I came back here in 2017 and played in the Hero event, and took full advantage of all the players in the field and their world ranking points. Because I think I was 1299 at the time. So was able to climb in the world rankings because of that. And then I started back in 18, started playing a little bit more, and I started building. And once I started building, I realized that after Tampa that I could win. Okay, and then I proved to myself that I could take the lead in the British Open. Okay, well, I could close, even though I did not win, I closed pretty good at the PGA at Belle Reve. And then 19, I won the Masters. Okay, well, I don't see that type of trend going forward for me. I won't have the opportunity to practice, in, given the condition of my leg, and build up. I just don't. So it's going to have to be a different way of doing it. And that's okay, and I'm at peace with that. I've made the climb enough times.
And then just one quick one. Have you played golf holes, like a full hole or 18 holes since the—
Yeah, I play full holes. Yeah, but not for my team markers.
Okay. Hi, Tiger. You've spoken again there about your career being different and being reduced and probably curtailed. But this is because of an accident and because of injury. It's not because you reached 75 years old. Is that easy for you to compute in your mind, or is it difficult that you're going to be stopped or pulled back because of external factors?
No, it's
factors.
Very easy, given the fact that I was able to come back after the fusion surgery and do what I did. I got that last major, and I ticked off two more events along the way. So, I don't foresee this leg ever being what it used to be. Hence, I'll never have the back what it used to be, and clock's ticking. I'm getting older. I'm not getting any younger. So all that combined means that a full schedule and a full practice schedule and the recovery that it would take to do that, no, I don't have any desire to do that. But to ramp up for a few events a year, as I alluded to yesterday, like Mr. Hogan did, he did a pretty good job of it. And there's no reason why I can't do that and feel ready. I may not be tournament sharp in the sense that I hadn't played tournaments, but I think if you practice correctly and you do it correctly, that I've come off surgeries before, I've come off long layoffs, and I've won or I've come close to winning before. So I know the recipe for it. I just got to get to a point where I feel comfortable enough where I can do that again.
I have one question for Mr. Munjal and one question for Tiger. Let me start with Mr. Munjal. Mr. Munjal, you've been friend with Tiger for a long time and you have known him for a long time. What is the one character trait in him that you really admire?
That's a tough one, though. But clearly, his resilience and desire to come back, fight back.
Tiger, I wanted to ask you, speaking to so many people before this tournament and even, before when you were playing in your heydays, if I would ask someone that, what do you think of Tiger at a major? 90% of them would say that he would win. Now when I ask people, more than 80-85% of them still think that you will be able to come back and win a major. What does that kind of expectation mean to you? I mean, and do you feel a little afraid that you might let down almost billions of people, of your fans, if you don't do that?
Well, I think it's awfully flattering that people think that highly of my game. You know, I think I've proven that I can play this game at a high level for a long period of time. And it's awfully flattering that they think that I can come back from this and win tournaments and, as you said, win major championships. For that to happen, I have a long way to go. I mean, I have a long way in the rehab process of this leg, and it's not the fun stuff of the rehab. You know, it's just reps and, you know, breaking up scar tissue and things that really hurt. So that part of it's not going to be fun, but the challenge of it is. You know, I enjoy the challenge of getting in there and trying to push it to the next level. Sometimes it's two steps forward, one step back, but you got to go through it. I enjoy that part of it, and maybe one day that it'll be good enough where I can get out here and I can compete against these best players in the world again.
We'll take two in the back right over there, starting with Bernie.
Tiger, good to see you again at the golf tournament.
Thanks, Bernie.
I was going to ask you, are you in any pain sitting in there now?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to get too personal, but what, you know, what are you experiencing there at the moment sitting there?
My back hurts and my leg hurts.
Uh-huh. Can I ask you, you probably answered this question a little bit already this morning, but what gets you through these dark patches you've had in your sort of in your life? What does it say about your character?
Well, it's having a great support system, great friends, great people around me that are positive and upbeat. But it's also the unfortunate part, experience. I've gone through tough procedures before in the past and then been sidelined and have had to recover. And having that past experience has helped. And just understanding the patience of timelines. You know, then when someone says that, like when I blew out my ACL and broke my leg, it was, you know, you're out for 9 months. Well, that's kind of a bummer. You know, nine months without it coming back to sport. Okay, well, you know, then back fusion surgeries, knee operations, and all those different timelines. Just understanding that having the patience, you know, within those timelines, how much can we push and how much we can't push. You know, that's you have to push until it hurts, but then you can't go overboard. You know, that's the hard part. But I've had so much experience in that regard that, yeah, I know. Okay, we've taken it a little too far. Let's pump the brakes. We'll stop it right here. Okay, you haven't pushed me enough. Now this is a good day. Let's continue to go.
Good to have you back, Tiger. Yeah. Good to have you back. And one question for Tiger and one for Dr. Munjal. Tiger, you've often spoken about your children, Sam and Charlie, for whom you want to play golf or to be able to play golf with them, Charlie in particular. This is the first time that they are seeing you go through what you're going through right now. Before that, they were far too young. So, like, what's been their reaction and the way you're trying to kind of get back to the golf course, especially for Charlie?
Well, they have known me, you know, more for being injured than healthy. You know, most of their lives, I was going through my back operations. So, you know, I was the guy sitting in the chair right in front of the TV playing Call of Duty while they're at school, and I just had to sit there and let it heal. And so they would play around me. They were so little. It was a surprise to them. Then they realized that I could play the game. So that's why the Masters was such an important family moment for all of us, for my mom, Sam and Charlie, all my friends, because it was, that's what they've seen. That's what they've grown up with. They don't remember any of the other times because they weren't alive yet or they're too young to remember. So in this case, it's like, back to normal again. Dad's not able to move. And so little things like that, to be able to go out there and do activities now with them, to watch my daughter play her soccer games and Charlie to play tournaments and to talk to them about it and to see them grow up and hear the verbiage that has changed, you know, as kids grow up. A little bit of an eye-opener at times to hear the words that come out. I'm definitely not in the know. A lot of things. I'm not the, you know, the hip, cool dad at times. So I'm trying to keep up with that. The lingo changes very quickly. So I'm trying to keep up.
Dr. Munjal, so you've known Tiger now for 7 years. You joined hands with him at a very crucial stage, you know, when, you know, a lot of people were thinking whether Tiger's going to be Tiger once again. He did. In this last say, 10 months or 8 months since February. What's the kind of interaction have you had, and what kind of expectations or hopes that you have for him, and how have they been?
I've been interacting with Tiger on on messages, talking to him off and on. Clearly, we all know what happened and what he's been going through. And I know, I understand, like you do, and to come back from this kind of an injury, this type of an accident, is something which is not impossible, but very, very difficult and very tough. As I just said, that one trait in Tiger that I best admire is his comeback, his resilience, and to fight back. Having said that, my only hope has been that he gets well, gets better, be with his family, and keep doing the good work through his foundation that he's been doing. And I've said this in the past, that my association or Heroes Association with Tiger is not around his current game or his current form. It is because what he's done in the past for the game, through the foundation, for sports in general. That's what I admire, and that's why the connect.
Tiger, I know you said earlier that it's difficult to put a timeline on a return, but an event like the 150th Open at St Andrews next year, given your history with the Open, your history with St Andrews, how much would that be an event you would like to be ready for?
Yeah, I'd love to play at St Andrews. There's no doubt about it. It's my favorite golf course in the world. And to be a two-time Open champion there, I would like to this. Just even being a part of the champions dinner is really neat. from my first one in 05 was my first one I got to attend the champions dinner. It was pretty neat to be a part of. And Peter Thompson was still alive, and I sat right next to him, and to hear him tell the stories of when he came over and he played, and shots he played, and where he won, how he did it. It was awesome. You know, those are things like at the Masters. Those dinners are priceless. And those stories, and listen to them talk about how they played and when they played it and what they did. And it's just an honor to be a part of a room like that. And yes, I would love to be able to play that Open Championship. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And this physically, and hopefully I can. I got to get there first, okay? The tournament's not going to go anywhere, but I need to get there.
Steve? Tiger, you're 46 that's coming up in 30 days. Is that still a day you look forward to, or is it just another day, or how do you approach your one more year around the globe?
Well, 4 more years, I'm in the cart. No, it's this year has been a year I like to turn the page on. And, it's been full of some tough memories and some tough times, but also some great times, too, as well. But, again, it would be nice to turn the page.
Doug?
Had a couple more things, Tiger. Best case scenario in the process of your recovery, and you can play pick and choose limited tournaments a year. How determined are you to win again?
Well, I got to be good enough to do it. Okay, so I got to prove to myself in practice that I'm good enough. I'll chip and putt any of these guys, but the golf courses are longer than just a chip and putt course. Okay, we're not going to be playing the par 3 course at Augusta, you know, to win the Masters. So I got to get a little bit bigger game than that. So I got a long way to go in the rehab process to be able to do something like that.
Did you just commit to the par 3?
No, I committed to that I can play courses of that length.
I got you.
Now, if a tour wants to not have golf courses lengthened, they shorten up that much to make it more difficult, and that's fine by me. I have no problem with that. They want to go back to wooden shafts and feathery balls? Okay, I'm cool.
And just a couple more that might be not that easy for you to answer, but even playing a limited schedule, if at all, not playing, what is your value, do you think, to the tour? What can you still bring to the tour, just being who you are and what you've done?
Well, I think that I host the Genesis event. I host this event here, the Hero World Challenge, and I think that those two events alone is a lot. I'm friends with majority of the players that are on top of the world rankings, and they text, call, FaceTime, do a bunch of different things, and I can still be a part of the tour, yes, even though I'm not playing in it.
And then lastly for me, and this was going on way before the accident, but this push toward a new league and or various new leagues, and it made me curious, if a player came to you for advice on whether they should join Greg Norman's league or whatever he's got going, what would you tell him?
Well, it's going to be his decision, period. I have decided for myself that I'm supporting the PGA Tour. That's where my legacy is. I've been fortunate enough to have won 82 events on this tour and 15 major championships and been a part of the World Golf Championships, the start of them and the end of them. So I have an allegiance to the PGA Tour, and I understand that some of the comparisons is very similar to when Arnold and Jack broke off from the PGA of America to start the tour. I don't see it that way. I think the tour has done a fantastic job. Jay's done an unbelievable job in a very difficult time during the pandemic. You know, when we had there was ample opportunity for players to leave, but we were the first sporting tour to start. So with that, yes, did we have some protocol issues at times? Yes, we had to learn on the fly. But Jay and the staff have done an incredible job of that, and so. I think the tour is in great hands. They're doing fantastic. And prize money is going up. It's just not guaranteed money like, you know, most sports are. It's just like tennis. You got to go out there and earn it.
Mark?
Tiger, I think over the last bit of time, we've seen you kind of humbled by getting through the back surgery and being able to make that comeback that you did and whatnot. I'm just curious, when you got on the other side of the surgeries and all the stuff that went on in February, and you realized the depth, you know, probably saw the pictures and whatnot of how bad the accident was, did you feel lucky to be alive? And is that part of why you're kind of at peace, you know, as you speak to us now about going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I said it yesterday. I feel I'm lucky to be alive, but also still had the limb. Those are two crucial things, you know. I'm very, very grateful that someone upstairs was taking care of me, that I'm able to not only be here, but also to walk without a prosthesis.
Daniel?
How realistic was amputation as an option?
What's that?
How realistic was amputation? Like, was that really
discussed? Yeah, it was on the table.
And my other question is,
All right, Brian, on the right.
Tiger, 25 years of the foundation.
Where am I looking?
Sorry.
Right over here.
Yep.
Also, 25 years since the 97 Masters. How do you look back at that event differently now than you did when you won it 25 years ago?
Yeah, our foundation work, my dad and I started the foundation 25 years ago. I won the Masters there 25 years ago, and also, you know, it's sad to say, but Lee Elder just passed, and he was there at the back of the green when I won my first Masters 25 years ago. When he competed and played in his first Masters, that was the year I was born. So those 25 years have gone by in blink. But those are, you know, three significant moments that happened, you know, all at once within the same year. Yeah, Dee.
I remember now. Sorry about that. You seem determined to, if physically possible, to play again. Was there ever a moment where you thought, is this all worth it again? Do I want to put myself and my family through all this? Or were you always determined to, if physically possible, try to play at least a limited schedule?
Well, You made a great point. You know, is it? Am I going to put my family through it again? And am I going to put myself out there again? And we had a talk within the family. You know, all of us sat down and said, you know, it's if this leg cooperates and I get to a point where I can play the tour, is it okay with you guys if I try and do it? And the consensus was yes. Now, internally, I haven't reached that point. I haven't proven it to myself that I can do it. Yeah, I can show up here and I can host an event. I can play a par three course. I hit a few shots. I can chip and putt. But, okay, now we're talking about going out there playing against the world's best on the most difficult golf courses under the most difficult conditions. I'm so far from that. Now, I have a long way to go to get to that point. Now, I haven't decided whether or not I want to get to that point. I got to get my leg to a point where that decision can be made. And we'll see what happens when I get to that point. But I got a long way to go with this leg.
Yeah, you were talking to Henny in that interview that came out yesterday, just about the little things that give you joy in the game of golf. And I was just wondering if that helped you get through, like, the joy of a well-struck golf ball and putt and yes. Chip.
Yes, it did. Well, they wanted me to go out there and hit a few putts, but I had a boot on. I mean, that doesn't do any good. You know, I have a boot that tilts, and it's not the same as putting, okay? Well, yeah, you're outside. And, yeah, I did crutch outside, and I would lay out there on the grass and just feel the sun because I've been inside for so long. Had to work on my tan. So it was nice to finally get the boot off and then hit a few putts. But then after hitting a few putts, I realized that, damn, that ball's a long way down there. I can't get out of the hole. So I had Matthew, you know, who works for me out back, I said, dude, no more holes, just sand-filled holes. I can't bend down that far. So, you know, little adjustments like that. But to be able to go out there and hit Old Faithful and feel the memories in that putter, and then get to a point where I could hit chip shots, and then I realized, ooh, I could hit that shot. Let me try and hit this one. And then my hands and feel started coming back, but then the aches and pains started coming. So, you know, back to the ice bath again. So it would be one of those things where I don't have the endurance to stay out there for long periods of time. But the fact that I'm able to do it is exciting, because there was a period in time where it didn't look like I was going to be able to do it again.
And then when it comes to the day of the crash, clearly that's something that you're hoping to keep private. Is that something that you feel like is sort of your business and not the rest of ours, for lack of a better phrase?
Well, I kind of feel like that way most of my life. It doesn't really work out that way. I understand that it's I had friends that insulated me from a lot of the things that were said outside. You know, I didn't have my phone. I didn't have, you know, access. I did have access to TV, and I was just watching sports. But I refused to turn on any, you know, local channels and news and stuff like that. You know, I didn't want to go down that road. I wasn't mentally ready for that road yet. A lot of things in my body hurt at that time. And whether I was on medication or not, it still hurt. And I just trying to imagine me coming off of that stuff, how much it was going to hurt. I didn't want to have my mind go there yet. It wasn't ready. So, yeah, people are going to poke and prod and want to know more about my business. I understand that. And just as long as they're going to my, they can poke and prod at me all they want, just stay away from my family.
Our final question from Tia, right in the middle.
Hi, Tiger. You expressed your body pain before.
Sorry, can't hear you.
Speak up a little bit.
Yeah, you expressed your body pain before. Could you express your mind feelings? And in the meantime, could you explain to us the goal of your foundation for the future?
My goal and my motivation for the future is to, right now, it's short term. It's not long term. It's trying to get my leg good. We're working with, you know, Hero right now this week. We're trying to grow the foundation. We're expanding it, trying to help more of the youths. You know, right now we're at 2 million youths served. That number, I think, is a little bit low, and I think we can do more, and we're working on other programs and other things that are going to be drastically different just because of the new platforms that are available to us and some of the different directions kids want to take. You know, then some just don't want to go to college. They want to have access to the workplace. Well, we have plenty of CEOs and plenty of people we know that can get them interest to interview. So let's help them with that. So yeah, so there's a lot of immediate stuff that I have been working on with the foundation. Haven't been thinking a lot of long-term golf stuff, just because I need to work on the short term and get this leg right before I can even, you know, put my mind there.
All right, all the time we have. Thank you, Tiger, and thank you, Dr. Mungell.
Thank you.
The words of the 15-time major champion, Tiger Woods, expansive at times, circumspect about his accident, without crutches or a wheelchair, as had been his station earlier this year. When Golf Today returns, Brando Chambly joins the show to react to Tiger's press conference. That's next here on Golf Today. The words of Tiger Woods moments ago in the Bahamas, a recent timeline involved in that single car accident February 23rd. Most significant injury in the crash was to his right leg and ankle. In a May interview, said post-crash injuries rehab had been entirely different animal. Then posted that three-second video a couple Sundays ago, hitting a golf ball on the range. And then today's press conference at the Hero World Challenge. About 30 minutes in length, this press conference. What was your chief takeaway, Eamon?
That if we had any doubt if Tiger was back, well, he's back. It is the Tiger of old in that he gives you nothing. And I thought it was interesting here. You have perhaps the most iconic athlete of his generation who was involved in a pretty mysterious car crash, who swatted away the first question about that car crash by saying it's in the police report, all the answers are there, which is demonstrably untrue. All the answers aren't there. There are a lot of questions that Tiger still should face, and it's an indictment of golf media that he wasn't actually asked in any follow-up questions about that. Instead, we got questions about, you know, did you miss the joy of a well-struck shot? Are you looking forward to St. Andrews? Well, that applies to all of us. And I thought it was interesting that how little was actually pressed on what has been the seminal event of Tiger's year and why we have not seen Tiger for 280 days. And his ability to just swat it away and not actually be pressed on it was disappointing in a way.
It was very similar, in my opinion, to past Tiger Woods press conferences in that he is the captain of all he surveys, and that includes the press conference. And he wanted to turn the page on 2021, and anyone could understand that. But there's also part of me, as someone who has covered his career and knowing the joy that Tiger brings, not only knowing what happened, but what changes may be coming in his life because of that. You know, what can he do to be more careful? You know, does he have a driver going forward? I mean, this is an accident that affected Tiger, could have affected others, affected his large fan base as well. So I was expecting that question to come from the media, if anything, about what changes in your life may be made going forward so this doesn't happen again. I said it last week, you know, I love Tiger Woods playing golf, but I'm tired of the comeback story. It's stressful for all of us, not to mention his family.
Yeah, there was very little that was based in what happened on February 23rd that came out of that. A lot of it was kind of forward-looking, what Tiger's going to commit to. And we all know from experience, Tiger doesn't actually give us anything on what he said going forward. I thought it was interesting that he drew a distinction between playing again at tour level versus a hit and giggle. Well, one hit and giggle is the PNC parent-child tournament in a little over 2 weeks. And they are holding a space in the field for that tournament for Tiger in Orlando in the week before Christmas. So perhaps that's where we may actually see him sooner than we think.
I'm a member of that golf club, a 36-hole event, golf carts available, a very flat course, and we saw the smiles that he had with his son Charlie when he competed in that event in Orlando, Florida. For more, we're going to turn to Brando Chambly on this Tuesday. Brando, you heard Tiger's words from the Hero World Challenge. What was your chief takeaway?
I don't think we really heard anything that we hadn't either read or been able to deduce, besides the fact that he wasn't supporting the Saudi League. I think that would have caused a lot of pupils to dilate and eyebrows to go up like circumflexes. But other than that, I would say he didn't give us much. And indeed, I agree with Eamon, the details of the the crash last year have been obfuscated from day one and continues to be so. But it's not so much what he said, but the way he said it that I think gave the entire golf world, those that care whether he wins or loses, reason to smile, because his determination was certainly there. It seemed like his mood was there. The cadence of speech was back. The leg might not be back to where it needs to be, but clearly his attitude and spirit is right where it is, and that's the larger reason why he's been able to win 15 majors and 82 tournaments. Another thing I'll say about this event, you know, this event, and you could to some extent call this a bit of a hit and giggle. But it has been notable for bringing together great players, and of course Tiger plays. But beyond that, it has been notable for, I think, foreshadowing remarkable recoveries in Tiger's career. You just go back to 2011. Remember, post-scandal 2009, you know, Tiger didn't win in 2010, and injuries in 2011. In late 2011, again, this foreshadowed his great comeback, rise to Mount Everest, in 2012, 2013, when he became the player of the world. And then if you remember what happened to him late 2014 at this particular event, when he looked like he had the yips, 15, 16, hardly played, didn't play at all 16, played once in 17, played in 17. At this event, that's the eighth hole in the second round. He shot 69 in the first round of 2017, but in the second round, he really wasn't tested chipping in round one. In round two, this shot into the green, uphill, short-sighted, I think told the entire world that, look, we knew with one swing of the club in 2017 that the spinal fusion was a success, but the technical confusion that led to the yips in 2015, 16, and suspected to be lingering in 2017 were put to bed right there. So this event has been notable in foreshadowing Tiger's comebacks. And even though, yes, there is still a lot unknown about what happened to him, comminuted is a word everybody looked up. That was the word used to describe what happened to his leg, the bones in his right leg. Comminuted, look that word up. It means to pulverize. Bones were pulverized. And it's not specifically those bones. And every expert that I've talked to about what likely happened to Tiger, it's a bone in the bottom of his foot, known as the talus bone. That bone, if it were comminuted, not broken cleanly, every single expert I've talked to has said it is highly unlikely he'll come back because it won't heal properly. It will always be arthritic. It will always swell. That particular question, I thought he danced around it. You know, he was very unclear about whether or not, you know, it was likely he could get back and have any sort of likelihood of competing at the high level. But it was clear that his spirit was there. And that was the overall takeaway for me, besides his remarks about the Saudi League.
Randall, another great major champion who had his body pulverized, of course, was Ben Hogan. And now Tiger is saying he's going to adopt the Ben Hogan model of playing just a handful of events, ramping up for the events that he wants to play that mean the most to him. You've already said Tiger's had one of the greatest comebacks, if not the greatest comeback in sports history, winning the Masters in 2019. Can he do it again playing a Ben Hogan type of schedule?
Well, I would argue he's played a very similar Ben Hogan type of schedule since he came back from the scandal and various injuries since 2009. 2010 to now, we're talking about 12 years, he's only played 115 times. Ben Hogan, after the accident in 1949, only played 70 times the rest of his career, although he played 19 different seasons, 70 times. Interesting. Ben Hogan won 11 times in those 70 events. Tiger Woods has won 11 times in these 115 events. I always used to joke that, you know, Tiger Woods, you know, when he's half as good as he used to be, is still twice as good as anybody. If you do the math, 11 wins in 115 events is a 10% win percentage. Well, that's about twice as good as anybody in that period, if you start to look at everybody. But going forward, you know, Tiger Woods, as Steve DiMeglio noted in the press conference, 30 days, he's going to be 46. You know, time is the great revealer, certainly, in terms of whether or not he can heal up. But it is also the great devourer, because as he's getting healed up, he's also getting older. Ben Hogan won his last major in 1953 at 42 years of age, won his last tournament. Only one more time would he win in 1959 when he was, well, turning 47, I believe, that year. And Ben Hogan, you could certainly argue, was in a lot better physical shape than Tiger Woods is likely to be in when he comes back. So it's a race against time. I mean, can he heal and can he get his body fit enough to compete at the highest level? You know, it is highly unlikely. But as you've already pointed out, this roller coaster ride of Mount Everest that he's been to, but he's also been to the Mariana Trench. Well, he's there again. And can he climb back up? I wouldn't put it past him. It seems inevitable that he will find a way to get to 83. It seems like the right place for Tiger to be because depending upon who you talk to, you know, he is either the greatest player who ever played or the player who played the greatest golf. But it seems likely that he will be the player who's won the most events before his career is done, at least to me.
Randall, I want to jump back to these Saudi comments that Tiger made. He was swatting away the various Saudi talking points quite effectively and deliberately during that press conference. But at one point he said that he was staying with the PGA Tour because this is where my legacy is, was the phrase he used. Is he kind of putting it up to other players by saying, look, I'm the guy you're being measured against and you're not going to be measured against me if you're playing essentially exhibition golf for the Saudis?
I absolutely think so. I think, look, you know, the Saudi Tour, you know, if they're able to cobble together some players, essentially you're talking about the same players beating the same players every single week. You know, missing would be the great comeback stories because, look, Tiger's, you know, perhaps his best events are the back and forth with Bob May in 2000, the back and forth with Chris DeMarco in 2005. It is that underdog element that adds luster to the greatness of Tiger Woods and certainly to the PGA Tour. You got to have people to beat, but you also have to have a feeder element to this tour. Where's the feeder element to that tour? I also thought there was another interesting point that he alluded to was the fact that, you know, to change the nature of the game from merit-based to based upon what you've done in the past, in other words, basically paying these players to show up, huge appearance fees, that changes the very nature of the game. The one thing that I think so many people, when they're talking about the PGA Tour and defending it, always allude to very quickly, if not first, that there are no guaranteed salaries. And I think that part of it is troubling to Tiger Woods. But beyond that, yes, I think you're quite right. Who are you beating? You're beating the same players week in and week out. Inevitably, those games are going to fall off on the Saudi Tour. So they're, you know, at the end of the year, perhaps they're beating 10, 15 players at best. I think he did a marvelous job of rightly swatting the Saudi Tour to the side.
Yeah, very strong endorsement of the PGA Tour, very strong endorsement of the Commissioner Jay Monahan as well. Brandel, we appreciate your time. We'll talk to you soon. Welcome back to Golf Today. On Sunday, the golf world said goodbye to Lee Elder, the pioneer who became the first African-American to compete in the Masters in 1975. He was also a four-time winner on the PGA Tour, member of the 1979 United States Ryder Cup team, an eight-time winner on PGA Tour champions. And the reaction has been deep and heartfelt on social media as well. Bubba Watson, two-time Masters champ. It was an honor to know Lee Elder. He inspired so many in life and in golf. His legacy will live on forever. Rest in peace. The tennis great Billie Jean King. In 1975, Lee Elder became the first black golfer to compete in the Masters. He broke other color barriers as well, a trailblazer, an athlete, and a true gentleman. May he rest in peace as his legacy lives on. Dr. Condoleezza Rice, Lee Elder exuded dignity and strength. He was a gentleman and a legend. I am grateful that I could watch him participate in the ceremonial tee shot with Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus at last year's Masters. Rest in peace, Lee Elder. And Steph Curry from the NBA, Golden State Warriors. Mr. Lee Elder, one of my heroes. Words don't do justice to the impact you had on golf and the black community. All I can say right now is thank you for blazing the trail. It's on us to stay the course and keep going in your honor. Rest easy, legend. We had many guests who celebrated Lee's life yesterday, including Renee Powell.
I have so many memories of when I think about Lee because I've known him for so long. We first met when I was just a teenager. I was 17, 18 years old and playing in the golf tournament and at Miami Springs Golf Course in Miami, Florida, and met Lee and we played a practice round together and just became friends over all the years. I mean, I went on the LPGA Tour. He went on the PGA Tour in the same year in 1967. And just before that, a year before that, I think we both won the UGA National Tournament in Indianapolis at Kauffman Park. I won the women's division. He won the professional division. And we played in a JCPenney mixed team championship together. And actually just about a little over a week ago, he called me about a project that he wanted me to be involved with him in during the U.S. Open this coming year. And the last time I heard from him, and so when I started getting phone calls last night, it just really, really bothered me. And I sadly found out that they were all true. He had passed.
Lee had this life, like Jaime said. It was evident from his smile. He had this big smile, and he was indeed a joy to be around. Pretty articulate, too, for someone who had a limited education. And that was impressive. But he had lived life and knew a whole lot about the back roads of golf and the fact that he had made it to the big time, that he had played with Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player and Arnold Palmer and all these stars, guys who he emulated and really respected.
It was an honor to be able to recognize him at the Original Tee Golf Classic, like we do so many legends every year. And, you know, I would see him at Anthony Anderson's tournament and all of the celebrity tournaments that he would attend. And he was always gracious and very humble. I ran into him again when he won the Bobby Jones. He was awarded the Bobby Jones Award, I should say, from the USGA. And he was tremendously proud of that accomplishment. And we had some great conversation in Las Vegas around that. And very familiar with his story. And, you know, it was great to see him at least get these recognitions before he passed away. Oftentimes, we don't recognize these folks until, you know, after they pass away, which is a terrible disservice to them, considering everything that they endured, the barriers that they broke down, and the things that they did to really advance the game of golf and to make it more diverse and inclusive, to let people know that a Black man loved this game just as much as everyone else and could play it at a very high level. And certainly we know he influenced people like Tiger Woods and all of the others that would come after him.
Yesterday was an important day. It was a heartfelt day. And Wendell Haskins, who we spoke to formerly with the PGA of America, he said that Lee was able to enjoy some of the fruits of his labor, that he knew at the end of his life how important he was to this game. How meaningful was that, even if many of the things that he wanted to in his prime were taken away from him?
I think it had to at least be some degree of satisfaction for Lee Elder that by the time he reached 87 years of age, that he had actually been acknowledged and widely, you know, paid tribute to, and particularly at Augusta this year. And it wasn't just the being there for the ceremonial tee shot and his ability to harness the power of Augusta National for his message at that time. It was the Lee Elder Day that was celebrated in Augusta, Georgia, 2 days earlier, and this was the same city in which Lee Elder had been denied food service in a restaurant the week he competed in the Masters in 1975. So I definitely think there had to be a positive for Lee that he got there. There were still other rewards that he should have had. He should have been acknowledged at the Memorial Tournament by now. He should have been in the World Golf Hall of Fame by now. He's not in either of those places. They'll be done posthumously. He lived 87 years. There was plenty of time to do it.
Yeah, and he carried such dignity along the way, and even if he was overlooked for many things, I do think in his passing there have been some wonderful gestures, and I think going forward maybe we'll learn of the great effects of his life in scholarships that will be in his name, bestowed in his name, the Lee Elder internship, for example, with the USGA, that hopefully even with his passing that his legacy will live on with action. That, you know, it's not just going to be the dignity of the man, but the dignity of the man turns into dollars and action and change.
And it's not just the internships and scholarships that we're going to see years from now that will bear fruit. We heard Tiger Woods say earlier, essentially, that he owes so much of his career to Lee Elder and Lee Elder's pioneering spirit and breaking the color barrier at Augusta National, what he did and what he fought against throughout his entire professional career. And Tiger knows how much more limited his prospects in this game would have been had it not been for guys like Lee Elder and Charlie Sifford before him. So he did get tributes, and he's getting tributes from the best who's probably ever played the game.
Let's keep the conversation going and welcome in one of the hosts from the Beyond the Fairway podcast, Doug Smith. Doug, it's good to see you. How should Lee Elder be remembered in your mind?
I think he should be remembered as tough. You know, we always talk about, you know, Lee Elder, these pioneers, that what they go through to be champion golfers, but we forget what they actually had to do off the course to even just tee the ball up. You know, Lee Elder was, you know, victim of racism, bigotry, like we've never seen, denied access to food while he's in town, as Eamon just said. And those things, Damon, that's the resilience, and that's the tough side of these individuals that we really don't get the stories of, you know, the death threats and how their families were threatened just to play golf. And as I say often, and just to chase a white ball around some grass, I mean, these guys had to put their life on the line.
Doug, in this game, we don't often celebrate people for anything other than a playing record. There are very few people who break out of that mold within golf, but Lee Elder was certainly one. Where does he belong in this kind of pantheon of golf heroes? Where is he on the arc? Is he the Arthur Ashe or Jackie Robinson figure in this game, to your mind?
He definitely is in the conversation with Jackie Robinson as it relates to breaking the color barrier there at Augusta National. But as you said earlier in the coverage, I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame, not as a, you know, for what he's done on the course, but what his legacy did as it relates to clearing paths for guys like Tiger Woods and eventually Willie Mack or Joseph Bramlett, Harold Varner, Cameron Champ. I mean, what Lee Elder did was inspire a generation, and I don't think he's got his just due. And I think a fair place to put him is in the Hall of Fame.
Doug, how much do you view Lee Elder's life as part of the black experience in the United States as a whole?
Damn, you try to get me, man. I think as his story and more things come out about who he was and what he had to go through, I think it mirrors some of the things that we African Americans go through still to this day, especially within the game of golf. Look, it is no secret that golf had a color barrier for minorities until 1960. So we're only 50 years removed from those times, Damon. And 50 years is not a long time, and things aren't moving fast enough. But when we look back at players, people like Lee Elder, I mean, what he did to make sure that we today, you know, have what we have. And one of the most gracious people I've ever met. I got to meet him one time at Cedric the Entertainer's event in California. That was 2019 when I met him for the first time. And he saw me hit a golf ball, and his smile and reaction of how he received my swing really, really felt good, because this is a guy that I've always heard about. You know, 1975, I was born in 84. So Lee Elder's been in this game for as long as I've been alive, clearly. But his impact on me and Tiger and other folks is, you can't put it in words.
Doug, we just heard Steph Curry pay tribute to Lee Elder there and thank him. And he used one of Lee's favorite phrases. He said, "It's up to us to stay the course." What does the course look like to you now? What do you think you would like to see happen in golf now to kind of bring forward what Lee Elder was campaigning for all those years?
Well, we need to make sure that golf, especially with the juniors that are coming into the game, have equitable access, you know, making sure that people that are in, you know, places of decision or the first tee organizations, entry-level golf organizations, the people that are running these places look like those persons that they want to be a part of it. I don't think golf is the most diverse place. I've said it multiple times on various platforms. And let's just be honest. I think change should have happened a long time ago and been a little bit more expeditious. That's just my standpoint. But has there been progress made? Absolutely. I love what Seth Wall's doing with the PGA of America and making sure that PGA Reach is in a position to grow the game amongst diverse populations. And I'm going to continue to be a part of those discussions. And I think, as crazy as it sounds, we have to be a little bit more patient. You know, I think we want things to be done quickly. And that's something that I struggle with. I want to see, you know, golf look like America now. But we also have to put things in place and put leadership in places to where people can foster the growth of the game correctly so it can sustain.
Powerful words, wise words. Doug, it's great to see you. Beyond the Fairway podcast. We'll be listening and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. You guys have a good day.
And you. The reaction continues to come in for Lee Elder. He passed away on Sunday at the age of 87. Champion man, legacy that will live on. And we are joined by Suzanne Pedersen now. Suzanne, you said earlier today that your favorite memories in golf are at the Solheim Cup. Quite a statement for a two-time major champ who has won all over the world. Why does the Solheim Cup move you in that way?
You know, Solheim has been a
made a massive impact on me as a player and has kind of defined my DNA as a professional golfer. I've had the experience, the highest highs, and some of the losses have kind of stung deeper than others. But in general, the experience you have when you compete in the Solheim and the friendships you build and bonds with other players are memories you sit back with now and you look back at and really cherish.
Suzanne, we're just watching you make that putt to win the Solheim Cup in 2019, which is one of the great walk-offs in all of sports. You made that putt, won the Solheim Cup, and immediately retired. Are we going to see you back out there over the next couple of years to stay close to the prospective members of your team? Are we going to see you back on the golf course?
Yeah, I might actually have to pick up my clubs and start playing some, but it won't be on the competitive side. But I think one of the most important things is to get to know the players, interact with them, get good relationships going, I mean, across the team. Hopefully get to know some new and young players coming through. Obviously, 2 years is a long time of qualification. So I'm very excited to get this journey started. Obviously, a very different role. And it might not have been the biggest surprise to the golfing world, but I'm just super stoked to kind of get this started and can't wait for 2023.
Speaking of being super stoked, you are a fiery competitor. How much will you carry that emotion to your captaincy as well?
I think one of the biggest things I took from being a vice captain with Catherine and Matthew was how calm and collected she was, and how that really kind of affected the players and how they felt and kind of the atmosphere she created. So I think obviously I'm going to give it my heart and soul, trying to do the best I can for these players and guide them as much as they need, if they need. But I think the best thing you can do is just create a great atmosphere and let the players go out and do what they know best.
Suzanne, you were also an assistant captain for Annika back in 2017, and you've played under six different captains all the way back to Dale Reid in 2002. Is there any particular lesson you took from somebody, either in the role as a player or an assistant captain, that you think is going to try to inform more of what you do through the qualification process over the next couple of years?
You know, I think each captain brings something unique to the table, and I'm going to try and take my own experience as a player, and then obviously the best from each of the six captains I've played under, and try to kind of create and put my DNA on it. It's not going to be easy, and I think at this point I feel like a rookie, kind of starting from scratch, but I'm going to draw attention. I told Beanie when I talked to her the other day, I might have you on speed dial for the next year or so, to kind of get some good advice, get some good word from someone who's been there before.
Suzanne, at the Ryder Cup, we saw Rory McIlroy in tears saying what the matches meant to him and that he hoped little boys and little girls dreamed of playing in Ryder Cups and Solheim Cups. How much can you relate to that raw emotion that he showed on that Sunday?
I just think this format is so unique, and it literally it brings the best out of everyone. It doesn't matter really what form you're playing coming into it. That week, you always find something special. And I think it just shows the character that the Ryder Cup and the Solheim Cup means to each of us. And, you know, I've had my best highlights from my career, and I feel like I've had a fairly decent career individually, but what really stands out is the Solheim. I think it's just, you go out there with your teammates and you play for one another, and you play until there's no more holes to be played. I just think enjoy the moments and kind of, it just gives you so much energy and excitement. And obviously, we all play with our hearts, and we don't want to disappoint people. We don't want to... all that matters is the team. So it's unique in its own way, and I just love to see the best players kind of bring their heart, play with their heart on their sleeve.
So Bazan, your team will be going for a third straight European victory in the Solheim Cup, which has never happened before. And we heard a lot of analysis at the Ryder Cup after the European defeat that suddenly Europe was caught between generations. There were a lot of old veterans. There wasn't necessarily a lot of young players coming through. How do you feel that the Solheim Cup team stacks up in terms of what that next generation is going to look like?
Well, it's quite fair to say that I have there's some big shoes to be filled after Beanie and the job that she's done leading two teams, two straight victories. I couldn't have asked for a bigger challenge, but you know what? We're going to roll up the sleeve and try to do the best we can, and I'll definitely give it my heart and soul. I think that's all we can do, but not an easy task to take over from what she's achieved.
Well, you haven't been gone that long. What's your assessment of the talent that the European Solheim Cup team has already? Now, obviously, the team could be a little different 2 years from now, but when you look at Leona Maguire and Celine Boutier and Matilda Castro and just the strength of these young players that are, you know, kind of making their early footsteps in their professional careers.
You know, there's some great talents, and I think Leona is just one out of many that kind of shined all the way from start to finish in Toledo. It was really fun to see and to witness from kind of inside the ropes. But I don't think you have to look much further than to the Junior Solheim Cup team to see the new potential superstars that's going to come through. I don't remember the exact stat, but if you look at the current Solheim players, I think there's the majority actually comes through the Junior Solheim. So it just shows that there's a lot of young, new talent coming through, and they all want to kind of knock on the door and make the big team. And I think it just shows the strength of women's golf and the direction we're going.
Well, a surprise to absolutely no one that you receive this great honor to captain Europe. Congratulations. We look forward to 2023, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you. Good to see you guys.